hidden corners, and acknowledging the suffering of the world. Those of us are proceeding more gingerly in the order of interbeing. One of the trainings that Thich Nhat Hanh wrote said, do not turn away from suffering. Go to suffering. Touch it in many ways, right? It is an axiom of Mahayana Buddhism that the lotus grows in the mud. Everybody's heard that, right? What do you think that means? Right? We see the beautiful lotus flowers growing on the lake. And we think, oh, they're like floating on the top of the lake and the water. But it's not true, is it? Their roots are in the mud, in the muck. I mean, the reason that has been chosen such a powerful acknowledgement of our path, Mahayana path, Vajrayana path, then path, is, you know, the mud is suffering, unsatisfactory, all the endless sufferings, types, big and small, of this world. And Buddhism teaches us not to want to deny or escape from, but to, in the very midst of suffering, we grow the lotus, the flower of what? The flowers of wisdom and compassion and understanding. All the virtues that we seek, they have to be grown in soil, right? And the soil is the suffering. So it is the acknowledgement of suffering and the actual feeling of suffering, again, which I asked Angie to help us experience today. As you heard earlier, you know, it is important that we weep for the world. Not all the time, not on a daily basis, because we want to get on with being of help to the world. But to skim the surface of the depth of the world's suffering, of our own suffering in this life. Just take a moment, this is just a little private introspection, a little private inventory. If you look back on your life, how much of your life would you say was really, and I'm not just saying generally, but like on a day-to-day basis, was really happy? You know, at home, at work, in relationships. How much of that time were you really happy? How much of that time were you unhappy? And how much of that time were you kind of neither? Which might actually qualify as unhappy. I mean, just take an inventory of your life. Even in childhood. And in the life of your family, your loved ones, your friends. Not how we present ourselves to the world. Not when we say, oh yeah, how's everything? Oh, everything's great. but I'm saying inside. How were we really? Were we really happy all the time, for decades and decades, at ease, always a sense of well-being, peace? Is that the truth? In our culture, it's very hard to admit the truth. We'll even put ourselves through endless kinds of pain and suffering rather than admitting the truth. But the Buddha said we have to acknowledge this, because this is the true soil in which real renunciation and aspiration and seeking another direction in life will come. The lotus grows in the mud. The desire to be free, to be awakened, to be liberated, to be happy, to be wise, to be helpful, arises only when we touch suffering. Our own and the suffering of others. The more we're willing to touch it and transform it into the flowers of awakening, the more powerful our, more beautiful our flowers will be. But if we're not willing to go there, we are losing our capacity to be enriched by this pervasive factor in this life. When we read the news every day, rather than getting angry, or saying, I can't believe it, or all the ways we think about it. What if we just stop and go, oh, this poor world. Everything it does, suffering. It can't even take care of its planet. It's like, you know, right? These poor, childish, sentient beings. Shanti Deva says, seeking happiness, they create the causes of more suffering. Very famous line from Shanti Deva. They so much want to be happy, and yet they endlessly give cause for more suffering. I mean, that's sad, isn't it? Many of us can look back on our life and those choices we've made, things we've done, not done, and we think, when I look back, I did them because I thought I'd be happy, right? You know, I mean, that's the honest thing. I thought it was for the best of everyone, but yet, you know, all I did is make it worse. So, Padre Rinpoche, words of my perfect teacher in the great introductory preliminary texts. In the suffering of human beings, he inventories the suffering of all six realms. But I'll just stick to the human realm tonight. Again, please go along with me. I was thinking about birth. Isn't it funny? If you watch animals give birth, I think we're always struck by how not a big deal it is, right? Just kind of, you know, the cow just kind of drops the calf down. The mare just kind of drops the foal down. The doe just kind of drops the fawn down. And they just run, plop. I mean, that's all, you know what I'm saying? And yet, think about the pain and suffering of human birth, for women. Isn't that interesting? What is it about this realm? Okay. I mean, it's very interesting, isn't it? There's something about this realm, this human realm. And other animals, we sort of imperceptibly notice they age, don't we? But they seem to do it with much greater ease than we do, don't they? Did you know? They seem to be okay with sickness, old age, and even dying, if you've ever been around animals, right? They seem to do it without a lot of suffering, right? You know, when they're old age, they just kind of hobble around a little bit more, but they don't really whine and complain, do they? Right? They're not always checking themselves in the mirror for wrinkles or gray hairs. I mean, right? And it's just interesting. They just kind of hobble around and, you know, right? Urinate a little more frequently, but, you know, it's, you know, it's just, I mean, it's amazing when you think about it. Right? I mean, considering that our bodies are participants in sort of the animal realm, and yet we have such problems with everything. Right? When animals get sick, they mostly what? What? Sleep, or just kind of lay out and, you know, let their body heal. But when we get sick, we get a lot of drama, don't we? Like being sick. It's interesting, isn't it? And again, I have very limited experience, but when you see animals die, how do they usually die? Peacefully, don't they? They just kind of go off and die. It's not a big deal. So it's interesting to just close your eyes and reflect on this human realm. Why sickness, old age, and death are these really, you know, markedly markers of suffering for human beings? And for other human beings. And how much fear and frustration and anger there is around sickness, old age, and dying for human beings. Right. Please see how you are with your own sickness, old age, and death. Are they sources of suffering for you? We're not going to do public disclosure, so you can be honest with yourself. Are you at ease? Birth, sickness, aging, death. Every human being experiences it. One degree or another, and of course, if you live long enough, you will experience aging, and everyone experiences death. That's the one thing we all experience. Our mortality, it all comes to an end. And we leave everything behind. Please close your eyes. If you were to die tonight, you be at peace? Could you just very easily slip out of your, you know, the mortal coil? Can you leave behind your things, your identities? peace with it? Do you feel a lot of suffering around the thought of dying, of no longer existing as a you? Pancho Rinpoche, usually they're called these eight sufferings. There are the four big ones, birth, sickness, old age, and death, and then the four minor ones. You know, everything is categories. The first one is the suffering that comes from the fear of losing loved ones. So this is not death, you see what I'm saying? This is sort of like life when we're alive, that this is a great fear we have, that we'll lose loved ones. Even though they're with us, we're afraid we're going to lose them, right? And of course, part of that was the fear of being alone. That's a fear of ours. We don't want to lose the people we love, the people that are part of our life. We're afraid of being alone without them. Yeah. But the other interesting side of that, we're also afraid of encountering those we don't love, or actually those we dislike or hate. It's another great fear of ours. We don't want to lose the ones we want, but we don't want to encounter the ones we don't want to encounter. Isn't that true? So that's the personal side. The other side is we are afraid of not getting what we want to get. What if I don't get it? And we're afraid of, we suffer from our fear of getting what we don't want. We want acceptance, but we're afraid of rejection. We don't want to get that. Right? If we succeed, we're afraid of losing it. And we're afraid of meeting failure. Yes, can you see it's all? In other ways, it's called in Buddhism that the human beings were always ping-ponging between hope and fear. We hope things are going to be a certain way, but we're afraid they won't be. Just close your eyes. Does this ring true to you? Do you ever suffer from fear of losing loved ones? And again, do you suffer often from your fear of meeting people you don't want to meet? People you're afraid of or you don't like? Don't want to run into them. all the things you're afraid of encountering in this life, all the things you don't want to happen to you. And all the hopes you have that it won't happen. Hope and fear. Many people, when they talk about death, they say, what? I hope. It's a pain-free death. Right? People say, but what are they afraid of? Same thing, isn't it? I hope it'll turn out the way I want, but I'm afraid it won't. I hope the relationship will be what I want, but I'm afraid it won't. Watch your mind. Does your mind do that a lot? Even on the smallest things, like you're going to go, I mean, you just, as you go into your experience, work experience, how much often is it between hope and fear? You hope it goes a certain way, you're afraid it's not going to go that way. The Buddha called that suffering. I hope I stay healthy, but I'm afraid of getting sick, getting disease. I hope climate change can be averted. But I'm afraid it can't be. I hope the big one doesn't hit Florida. But I'm afraid it might. I mean, there are a million things that our mind ping-pongs around. Life, big and little, hope and fear, gain and loss, wanting this but afraid it won't occur, and I'll get what I don't want. Big fear. Check your mind, how much in the mind of those around you is this, are these four found, these minor sufferings, losing what I have, not getting what I want, losing what I hope and fear. Just pervasive to the human condition, human beings. It's what's going on in our minds a lot. Hope everybody has a good time, but I'm afraid they may not. Brian's going, you know, I hope they like the food, but I'm afraid they may not. I mean, it's strange, isn't it? The Buddha called this suffering, this kind of ping pong back and forth, unsteady, not at ease. Attaching, averting. In the beginning, your son is like a charming little god. You love him so much you cannot bear it. In the middle, he ferociously demands his due. You give him everything, but he's never satisfied. He brings home someone else's daughter, pushing his kindly parents out. When his father calls him, he doesn't deign to answer. When his mother calls, he doesn't even hear. In the end, he's like a distant neighbor. You destroy yourself nourishing a swindler like that. How frustrating it is to beget your own enemies. This is Milarepa, like in 1,000 years ago. In the beginning, a daughter is like a smiling little goddess, imperiously monopolizing all your best possessions. In the middle, she endlessly asks her due. She openly demands things from her father and steals them from her mother on the sly. She's never satisfied with what she's given. She's a source of despair to her kindly parents. In the end, she's a red-faced ogress. At best, she's an asset to someone else. At worst, she'll bring shame upon you. How frustrating she is, this ravaging monster. In the beginning, friends meet you joyfully. They smile. And the whole valley rings with, come in, sit down. In the middle, they return your hospital with good food and beer, item for item, exactly one for one. In the end, they cause you strife based on hate or attachment. How frustrating they are, these evil friends with all their quarrels. This is the great Longchenpa. You would like to stay with family and loved ones forever, but you are certain to leave them. You would like to keep your beautiful home forever, but you are certain to leave it behind. You would like to enjoy happiness, wealth, and comfort forever, but you're certain to lose them. You would like to keep this excellent life with its freedoms and advantages forever, but you are certain to die. You would like to study Dharma with your wonderful teacher forever, but you are certain to part. You would like to be with your good spiritual friends forever, but you are certain to separate. Oh, my friends who feel deep disillusionment with samsara, I, the Dharmaless beggar, this is Longchenpa talking about himself, exhort you. From today, put on the armor of effort, for the time has come to cross to the land of great bliss, whence there is no separation. Yeah, so this is, you know, we could go on and on and on with these. Is there clarity around the importance of this meditation on the suffering, the unsatisfactoriness of all contaminated things? this world of attachment and aversion. Again, it's not the things of the world, it's the way we relate to it. Just like we said, animals seem to have no problem at all relating to birth and sickness, old age and death, do they? But it seems to be a great source of suffering, right, to human beings. Animals seem to do much better with gain and loss, don't they? Right? And you know, I do a lot of observation of the squirrels in my yards. You know, some days there's a lot of nuts to be gathered. Some days, you know, there's not much at all. But I don't see them going into deep depressions. You know, when it's a bad day. You know, I mean, they don't go home and kick the kids or something. At least I don't know what they do. But, you know, it seems like somehow they just, you know, end of the day, no matter what it's been, they just climb back up the tree, right? You know, get into their nest. Right? Isn't that true? And yet, the way human beings, the way we relate to life, the ups and downs, the backs and forths, the comings and goings, because of our delusion, because of our belief in solidity of things, we attach and avert. And we cause great suffering to ourselves and others. You know, if we don't see that deeply, you know, sort of in a feeling state way, you know, it's like there's not gonna be a lot of energy. If we just see it intellectually, as many of us do, it's not a strong motivator. Do you know what I'm saying? You know, it's like with addicts, the way we talked about addicts, you know, they, you know, most of them know intellectually for years that there's something wrong. But it's only when they really touch that place of suffering within themselves or really acknowledge deeply the suffering they're causing the others, right, that they're really motivated to make a significant change. Isn't that true? No. Is there anything not clear about this meditation on suffering and this unsatisfactoriness, the fundamental unsatisfactoriness of worldly life? Again, that is predicated on that you're being someone who is looking for satisfaction in life, for happiness in life. Right? You see, if it doesn't, you know, if you still enjoy the game, you see what I'm saying? Then this teaching wouldn't have any meaning for you, would it? No. This teaching's only for people who are looking more deeply into it and willing to acknowledge sort of the underside, the thing that nobody talks about. You know, why addictions and depression and anxiety and every kind of phobias and disorder is rampant in this society that has so much. What does that tell us about this world? Right? About the happiness of beings, the fulfillment of beings. Right? We have to look under the surface. You know, why are 18-year-olds spending their life playing video games? fundamentally so unsatisfying. Right? Right? I mean, what's underneath that? What does that tell you about the mind state of people, the suffering of people? And not knowing what to do. So they turn to what? You know, the meaningless, but it's stimulating. Shantideva, for beings long to free themselves from misery, but misery itself they follow and pursue. They long for joy, but in their ignorance destroy it, as they would their foe. Is this true? I mean, close your eyes a second, just listen. Is this true? This is true for us, for people we know. They want to be free from misery. They want to be free from suffering. They want to be free from unhappiness. But yet they follow it and pursue it, all the things that create that. They long for joy, but in their ignorance, they destroy their joy, as they would their foe. They long for happy, harmonious relationships, but in their ignorance, what do? Right? They do everything but that which supports that. Do they do it because they're bad people? No. They don't know better, do they? They think that what they're doing is right. We think what we're doing in the Middle East is right, don't we? See, when it's like big, we see it. But we don't see it just in the small things of our life. It's the same, isn't it? Shantideva says, all the joy in the world comes from wishing happiness for others. All the suffering of the world has come through pursuing pleasure solely for oneself. Another famous quote. A little variation. We who, like senseless children, shrink from suffering, but love its causes. We, like senseless children, shrink from suffering, but we love its causes. Many people say, yeah, I know it's a bad habit, but I know I really shouldn't be doing this, but. Huh? All the harm with which this world is rife, all fear and suffering that there is, clinging to the self, the I has caused it. What am I to do with this great demon? If this I or self is not relinquished wholly, sorrow likewise cannot be avoided. If they do not keep away from fire, people can escape from being burned. To free myself from harm and others from their sufferings, let me give myself to others, loving them as I now love myself. There is another way. Should we do walking meditation? But earlier, in this meditation, reflection, contemplation on this unsatisfactoriness of the samsaric world. The result is this kind of, we might say, feeling it. It's a feeling you're left with. And you don't have to be afraid of it. You know, to touch, you know, the fundamentally, you know, the sadness of the human condition. Right? The sadness that human beings, like we said, want to be happy and yet just endlessly create more problems, suffering for themselves and others. And so sitting with that is okay. It won't destroy you, it won't depress you. It's just a feeling. To feel shows we're alive. Right? Human beings, we feel. But a lot of times our feelings come from afflictions like anger and fear and despair. But this is just touching the sadness. It's important that we touch that. Because out of that comes what's called bodhicitta, the desire to be free of suffering and desire to help all beings free themselves from their suffering, you see. So it doesn't come from the head, it comes from the heart. The essence of Mahayana Buddhism is this wanting to liberate all beings from their suffering, from their delusion. But it has to begin with really feeling the weight of what sentient beings carry with them. It's not overwhelming. It's good. See if you can feel it. Sometimes it's just feeling the sadness of another, the disappointment of another. You know? Oh, that's what it's like to be there. That's what it feels like. See, when we watch the news, we don't get the feeling, do we? It's all one-dimensional. We see the pictures of all those refugees. Bombed out this, but we don't. What does it feel like to be there? You see? It's all up here. It's all kind of visual and one-dimensional. We never want to lose our capacity to feel the suffering of another. And it doesn't mean to be overwhelmed, doesn't mean to, you know, not like that at all. It's just it touches you, it touches your heart. Can't turn this teaching into like just a conceptual thing, you see. Because then it could possibly lead to indifference. Oh, I get it. Yeah. Everybody suffers, I get it. See, there's no energy behind that to want to do anything. And in the mud of suffering, we grow lotuses. Just close your eyes a minute and check yourself. Do you allow yourself to touch suffering, the suffering of others close to you, suffering of neighbors, suffering of family members, suffering of the world when you watch the news and you see those, all those people suffering? Do we go, oh, can we feel it? What it's like to be them? Do we look at them and say, they're just like me, they're human beings just like me? You know, they love their children too. They want their children to be safe and happy just like me. Meditations on impermanence, on unsatisfactoriness, they shake us up and pull us away from our self-centered living, our pursuit of pleasure, living, or self-concern. They make our world wider, more inclusive. Without these meditations and reflections, it's very easy just to get lost in our own tiny world, isn't it? There's a reason all this is the core of the Buddha's teaching, the core of Bodhisattva training, these four. We've only done two of them. And we'll do the third. So you know, tomorrow our Sangha, for people from out of town, our Sangha is going to be joining us, right? You told them. So this is an experiment, another one of these experiments you're on with us, because we will, you know, ask them to come in silence. You know, I think those who come who are members will understand it. We also have people who, you know, aren't members or people just coming for the first time. So we'll see how that goes. We will have reserved seats. So the seats we sit in the morning to the front, we've been told, we'll just put a little personal thing on it so we'll come back to it. Tomorrow we'll be doing the third seal, the seal of no self. Kind of a happier seal. And then on Monday, we'll have the final seal, which is Nirvana, which will really make you happy. Anybody want to share what's in their heart? We have about 5 minutes. Yes. Just hold on 1 second.
Just that we're so incredibly privileged and fortunate to have such relatively easy lives. We don't lack for anything. We're food secure. We have shelter. We have everything we need. Everything we can't even imagine. And we're just a small minority of the population in the world, and there's so many people who don't have enough to eat, who don't know if they're going to be bombed in the middle of the night, and who it's just staggering to think about the enormity of the suffering that exists now on the planet. And I mean, I know it always has, but there are just so many more people now than there used to be. So anyway, it just, it's huge.
Anybody else want to share what's in that? Evelyn? Or, Darlene, you had your hand up, or you're, okay, since you're right there.
Yeah. That feeling of not wanting to feel that pain, but feeling it, is the connection. That's the connection. And without feeling that, we're never there. We're not there. So thank you for that teaching.
Thank those who taught me. Evelyn? Yeah, over here.
the opening of the heart, and like it hurts, but it doesn't hurt. You cry, but you're happy. It's just so. It's a very. It's really amazing to feel both.
Anybody else? We have about 2-3 minutes. And now a word from Kat.
I was just feeling grateful because, like, before I came to this place, I had a mentor that shared with me, you know, like, I really didn't understand about, like, sexual assault. And I didn't understand, like, the powerlessness and how, you know, like, traumatic that could be. And I just, you know, was so grateful for that teaching and that understanding because, you know, a lot of times we can't really understand what people are going through unless they're willing to share it. So I'm just feeling gratitude for that understanding.
Anybody else want to share what's in their heart this moment?
So I was just reflecting tonight how true it is that our own familiarity with suffering is what opens the heart. So when I look at pictures of children being separated from their parents, the compassion that I feel arises from my own experience of 10 months in a rehab hospital separated from my parents. And I know how horribly painful that was. An hour a week, and these kids don't even get an hour a week. You know, and the same thing happens when I watch what we're doing in Syria right now. And I see it's the children who get me, who evoke my compassion. You know, how can we be doing this to families and forcing them to put a few belongings in the back of some pickup truck and go off they know not where just because we decided, our country decided to pull out and destroy these people's home. You know, so that's what happens when I watch the news. And on the other hand, tonight sitting here, it's like there's a resistance to want to call that up. It's okay when it happens spontaneously. But to sit here in the meditation hall, it feels like, you know, it feels like doing exactly what Shantideva points out is so incredibly stupid. You know, beings long for joy, yet in their ignorance pursue it. Long for joy, yet in their ignorance destroy it as they would a foe. So if I'm not suffering at the moment, I want to call it up tonight.
Because you're not calling up your suffering, you're calling up suffering. Fundamental condition, because it is the ground that forces us to let go of our selfishness, Carol. When you extrapolate your own personal suffering to the suffering of the world, and if you, the same energy you put into ending your own suffering, you put that a million times more into ending the suffering of the world. It's like that. That's how it happens. That's why it's done. It's not to create suffering. It's for the ending of suffering. So I'm glad you raised that point because it's not about suffering. So good. Thank you, everyone.